Well, hey, good to see you. My name is Stuart Takahara, the Vice President of Membership here at the Long Beach Area Chamber of Commerce. Today is a little different on this podcast. We actually recorded this back in December before the holidays, and I'm going to replay it here. So a couple tips for you. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can skip ahead. You can see all of the questions, all the different laws that we're covering, and how it's going to affect you. So there's a lot of them in here. So if you don't want to hear all of them, you can kind of skip to the ones that you need to take a look at. Finally, if you haven't already done so, please follow us, The Catalyst Online. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Spotify, on iHeart, everywhere you get your favorite podcast. All right, let's dive right into it and introduce our guest. Well, as you know, every year there are a ton of new laws that go into effect. And today we are excited to introduce Adriana Adams-Lee from the HR Network. And she is going to talk to us about all of the new HR laws that are going into effect in 2026. And Adrian, well, first off, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You sent a really detailed package of a lot of the laws that are coming to effect. We're not going to go over all of them, but we're going to hit on the ones that make the most amount of difference, or the ones that's mostly going to matter to most business owners, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, there's a long list here. I'm just going to turn it over to you. So let's go ahead and dive right into this.
Okay, great. So, yes, every year, especially in California, there's always a pretty long list of new employment laws that affect employers, might affect what kind of notices they need to give, if they need to update their handbook, change their policies or practices. So we're going to address some of those today. I think probably first and foremost is minimum wage, right? Minimum wage impacts a lot of employers, and minimum wage has gone up every year now for many years. Typically, it is based on the consumer price index. This year it's 3.3%, and minimum wage is going from $16.50 to $16.90 an hour. That means all employers who have minimum wage workers as of 1/1 will have to update their those minimum wage workers to the new rate of pay. And it affects other things as well. It affects many other things, the overtime rate, right? It affects piece rate, the exempt pay rate. It requires a notice. So all employers have to give notice, the notice 10-25 notice to employees as to what their new rate of pay and new overtime rate will be. So anytime that gets affected, it affects the regular rate calculation for paid sick leave, overtime, premium pay. It affects the split shift premium. So it has a lot of impact, not just on the actual rate of pay itself. So employers need to plan for that and prepare the right notices.
Yeah, there's a big trickle-down effect. When you change that one number, it changes everything because everything else is tied to that one number, the minimum wage.
That's right.
Now, here in Long Beach, we have a variety of different minimum wages too. This is the regular minimum wage, but we also have a minimum wage for hotel workers and all that.
That's right.
But because this minimum wage is still lower than the service workers or the hotel workers, it doesn't affect them. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct. Okay. So let's talk about, I'm going to come back to that in a minute because I want to talk about exempt salaries as a result of the minimum wage increase. So under the rule for exempt salaried employees, they have to be paid 2 times minimum wage. So if minimum wage goes up, so does their salary. So next year, the minimum exempt salary threshold will be $70,304. That's a pretty big jump. That number has jumped significantly over the years as well. So some employers might say, my exempt person doesn't really qualify for a $70,000 salary. So they're not doing a $70,000 job, mm-hmm. even though their job duties may have passed the exemption test. So I tell those employers, you can always pay an exempt person by the hour. Pay them hourly. The only thing they have to remember is that they're going to have to use, they're going to have to go by all the wage and hour laws, overtime, meal periods, breaks, et cetera. So that's something they have to kind of think about and weigh. And then, as you said, there is a separate minimum wage for hotel employees. It's $20 an hour. For exempt hotel employees, their minimum wage standard for exempt salary is higher as well because it's 2 times their minimum wage at $20 an hour. They have to earn the equivalent of what $40 an hour is per year to be exempt. So mm-hmm. it's a bit of a challenge to look at all these facets and keep up with it and get out all the notices that you need, but it's something we've kind of come to expect every year.
Yeah. Yeah. What about next year? Is the minimum wage set to go up every year for a while? Because I know sometimes their laws are passed where they're going. So we're going to have to go through all this again in 2027.
Possibly. It's all about the it's all about cost of living and the consumer price index. So California has specified that we have the right to raise the minimum wage based on the consumer price index. And so far they have for the last, I think, 4 or 5 years.
Okay. So that's a big one. What else do we got?
Okay. Let's talk about mileage. Let's talk about mileage because that's a question a lot of employers have. IRS mileage rate. As of today, and we should note it's mid-December, the IRS has not specified what the 2026 mileage rate will be. I expect them to, although in the past, sometimes they waited as late as this, as February of the new year to put out a new mileage rate. So for now, the mileage rate remains at 70 cents a mile. Why do employers care about this? Because one of the laws in California is that employers have to reimburse employees for all expenses incurred in the course of doing their job, which includes driving to a facility, driving out of town to a meeting, whatever that might be. And so the IRS mileage rate is the standard rate we use to reimburse them for those miles.
So is there a chance that that number is going to just remain at 70 cents or is it definitely going to be going up?
It could. Gas prices have gone up, so but they've also recently come down. So I have seen years where the IRS actually decreased the rate, and I've seen years where they've kept it the same. So really, we don't know until they publish it.
We just don't know. And again, we're recording this in mid-December, right before the holiday break, and it's going to air in January. So what I'm going to do is, at the end of this podcast, I'm going to amend it if we have any new information.
Okay, great. Right, so that'd be great.
Stick around to the end of this show. And then when we go post, if we know the answer to this question, then I will put it at the end of this episode.
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay. Let's talk about a law called new law, SB 261, DLSE orders, decisions, and awards. So this is an interesting law that essentially says, if you have a judgment as an employer for unpaid wages, and you have not satisfied that judgment at least 180 days after the appeal process has lapsed, the state is now going to charge you 3 times the amount you owe. So that's a pretty big bite of the apple there.
Yeah.
So it behooves employers then to get those judgments paid by the end of their appeal process. If they've run out of the appeal, the timeline has lapsed for them to appeal, they need to get those judgments paid or else it's going to cost them 3 times that amount.
So that's if they weren't paying wages, the employee sues, gets a judgment and says, the judge says, no, Mr. Company, you owe this money to this employee. If they don't do it within 180 days, then they're going to get slapped with a 3 time. And that could be huge.
Huge. So important. So those need to get resolved.
Yes.
Okay. Next. Go ahead.
Real question on that.
Yep.
So this law, that part, the SB 261 goes into effect on January 1st. What happens? Is that for judgments effective January 1st or later? But what happens if there's a company that already say they had a judgment put against them in November or December 2025? Does not affect that? Or does affect
it could
that.
Affect that if they are within if they are in the appeal process and now and the 180 days occurs the lapse of that occurs in 2026 yes then they that could occur to them
it could fall under this law so
yeah
okay got it
okay let's talk about wage theft and withholding of tip penalties that are coming because we have a lot of hospitality in Long Beach. And so I think this one could really be important. So in the past, if an employee felt like they didn't get their tips properly, they weren't paid out their tips properly, whether it was in a tip sharing pool or manager took their tip off the table, whatever it might be, they didn't really have a course of action to take to try to recoup those tips that they felt they were owed. The only thing they could do is really take a civil action. Well, now there's going to be a law that allows them to file a wage claim against the employer for non-payment of tips. So as a reminder, employers are already prohibited from collecting, taking, or receiving any type of gratuity that the patron left the employee, and it includes applying those tips against their wages. They can't do that now. So now the labor commissioner is authorizing what they call gratuity theft to be a matter of filing a wage claim. And in addition to the wages owed, the tips owed, the employer is also subject to a civil penalty of up to $100 for each employee whose tips were taken, in addition to restitution, which could be, again, three times the amount, because the labor commissioner likes to tack on taxes, interest, and additional penalties.
Now, it's important to note that this is a California thing. So in some states, there is a tip credit where they just have to make the minimum wage. But that, to be clear, does not qualify here in California. We don't do it that way.
Correct.
So for new business owners that may be coming into California, that may be starting or maybe coming in from another area, California's a little different. So
right.
I know states like Tennessee and stuff like that, they have the tip credits. But so that's important for people who may not know or just starting out a business or relocating from other areas. California's a little different, a little stricter when it comes to that.
That's right. Okay, what do you have next on your list?
We've got AB 858, the rehiring and retention of displaced workers. Now, I saw this one headline and it kind of caught my attention.
Okay.
So it kind of reminded me like during COVID when we were getting the PPP money, you know, we had to retain the employees, keep them on payroll and whatever. Is this kind of like that or is this separate or is it different?
It's very much like that. As a matter of fact, it is an extension from COVID.
Okay.
So let me reiterate, AB 858, it's called Rehiring and Retention of Displaced Workers. And it only applies to hotels with 50 or more rooms, event centers, airport hospitality and service providers, and building service contractors and private clubs. So if you are not an employer in that group, this does not apply to you.
Okay.
Okay. So this rule has already been in place and it remains in place. Essentially, what this is an extension of that rule that will be extended until 1/1, at which time they may extend it, but for right now, it's extended to 1/1/27. So the rule essentially says, if you have any laid off employees, you then have a job opening, you must first offer that job to the laid off employees before you can hire outside.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have to do that within 5 days of establishing that position. You have to notify those laid off workers. You have to do it by hand delivery or email, or you can do it electronically by email or text if available. If you have one position, but let's say you have five laid off workers, you can send the notice to all five, even though you're only going to select one. But the one you select is the one with the most seniority. So essentially what you're doing is bringing back the most tenured employee back to any openings you have before you can go outside. Now, if none of them accept the job, then you're free to go outside. But you first have to offer it to those laid off workers.
Now, does it have to be the exact job that they had before, or can it be a similar job, or what's the criteria on that?
It can be a similar job. If you have a job opening, as long as they're qualified, right? You don't have to put a non-qualified person into the job, but you first have to make any job openings that you have come available to any laid off workers that have been laid off since COVID times.
Okay, that was going to be my next question, is how far does that go back?
Yep, since COVID. So this was originally, this was a recall and retention program that was put out in COVID, and they are just extending that. So the hotels and the groups that fall within this should be pretty familiar with it. It's a rule they've been following now for a couple of years.
Got it. Okay. So SB 294 is the Workplace Know Your Rights Act.
Okay. California wants to make sure our employees know their rights. They have always done that. So the Know Your Rights is a new notice that's coming out from the labor commissioner. Then they are putting a new notice together. It has not come out yet. They tell us that they expect it to be ready by January 1st, 2026. Now, famously in the past, that's often not, they don't meet their deadline and it extends the deadline. They're going to put this new notice out, and the notice is going to specify what their workers' rights are regarding workers' compensation, notice of inspection by immigration agencies, and about engaging in concerted activity. Concerted activity means talking about work conditions, pay, things like that, that people may be unhappy with, which is always a precursor for maybe choosing to unionize or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then also what their constitutional rights are of employees when interacting with law enforcement in the workplace, because this and another law is starting to target employees who may get picked up by ICE in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And so this addresses that situation. Now, employers have until February 1st, 2026 to get this notice out to all its employees. I assume if the labor board isn't ready by 1-1 with this notice, they'll extend the notice by which employers can get it out. But they have essentially about 1 month to get it out. There's a part two to this. The part two is that employers have to provide a emergency notification to employees in an emergency. Again, the emergency in this case being if ICE were to walk in, arrest somebody, haul them away. We don't know where they went, where they are, but their emergency contact needs to be notified. So we now have to give all employees a new emergency notification form, even if a company does that, right? A lot of companies do include that in the new hire packet, but it could have been years since they filled one out. So we suggest that they provide all employees with this notice a new emergency contact form as well.
Yeah. And now this is, again, for all businesses, regardless of size.
Correct.
So a lot of the laws that we talked about already say if you have X number of employees or if you're within a certain sector, this one applies to everybody.
That's right.
Next on my list, AB 250, it extends SOL for sexual assault and harassment claims.
Okay, so the statute of limitations for sexual assault and harassment claims. Right now, the statute of limitations is 3 years to file a claim. This now gives persons who feel that they have a harassment claim or sexual assault claim that has already expired, that statute of limitations expired, it is now opened it back up for them to refile the claim if they can prove or if they can show that there was a cover-up or a concerted effort to hide evidence regarding that matter. So what does that look like? They felt coerced to drop the claim. They felt coerced to not bring it forward. They were offered something in exchange for not bringing it forward, right? Some kind of cover up. If they can show that, then they can now reopen or refile their harassment claim.
For how long? It extends the window? It extends the statute?
I don't know if I know the answer to that off the top of my head.
But the point is, if there's an employee that feels like that they now qualify for this, they should act quickly.
Well, right. It certainly... I mean, in 2026, if their statute of limitations had already expired for the claim they were going to file, mm-hmm. the 3-year window, they can now come forward. So
okay.
Even though the might have happened more than 3 years ago, they can mm-hmm. actually come forward if they can show or express that there was a cover up for them not to bring this claim forward.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting. I think we're going to see some claims.
Yeah. You know, and we know that the 3 years is kind of a small window, but they have to have new evidence, right? They have to show that there was a cover up or that there was. They just can't bring it up again, even though it's been settled. Almost like there has to be new evidence or there has to be some new information that comes forward.
Right. And well, the new information was I never filed a claim because my boss tried to coerce me into not doing it by these actions or these words that they took, or I was intimidated by this. Here's my statement. And probably that's the evidence. Here's my statement about it. What that will at least do is open the claim and then it'll be under investigation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be a big one probably coming up here. Senate Bill 513, personal record keeping requirements.
Okay. So this is an odd little duck, but it affects employers. So we need to talk about it. how this bill came about, what it is. Let me explain what it is, and I'll tell you how it came about. We already have a rule that says we have to allow employees to inspect and receive copies of their personnel file, and we have to provide that to them within 30 days of that request. That's already a rule. But now we have to maintain a new record within the personnel file of any training they receive. It's a training record, essentially. And the training record would include their name, who the trainer or who the training provider, the duration and date of the training, what core competencies they learned in the training, and if there was a certification or qualification that resulted by obtaining the training. But there'll probably be a form out there, but that's simply what you have to keep. And then you have to keep that in the personnel file for up to 3 years after termination of that employee. Why do we have to keep this? Why is that so important all of a sudden? Well, what happened is we had a refinery that closed in Southern California, and because it closed, employees couldn't get copies of their personnel file or their personnel record, of which included some certifications that they needed to be able to be in that kind of job. And so they had to go get recertified before they could even go obtain new employment. So this is how it came about, but it's going to affect all employers.
So what about, I'm thinking restaurants and bars and service industry kind of things like that, where they're trained on a certain procedure. Like, hey, here's how we make our pizzas. Here's our protocol on customer service. And they have internal training documents in that. Is that what we're talking about here?
I don't know that I would consider it internal procedures as much as a good example. Bartenders have to get a certification.
Yes.
And show certain training that they've received. I know there's another one. Restaurant workers have to get food handling.
The food handling.
That's right. So, and they receive training for that and they get a certification. Certainly for those, I would create this training record and have it in their personnel file. I don't think I would probably, it doesn't cover really things like internal procedures. Here's our SOP on how to make this dish.
So this is more about, in the event the business closes, it's just another record to say, I have this experience, I have these qualifications, I have this certification. So here you go. Don't make me do it again.
That's right.
Right. Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Because like in the restaurant service, they have the certification. It's good for 7 years or whatever. And normally they do it on their own and they provide it to the employer. And sometimes you're right. They don't do that. The employer offers these trainings or these certifications and they never get it. They never get the.
That's right. That's right. I would also keep it for other required trainings like sexual harassment. I'd create one of these training records. A lot of times people who provide sexual harassment training, we do, for example, they provide you a certificate of completion.
Mm-hmm.
I would, in the event you don't get one of those, then I would create this kind of training record that they received that training.
Yeah. And again, businesses of all sizes.
That's right.
SB 406 is a workplace protections for victims of violence. And this one's already gone into effect. It went into effect October 1st, 2025.
It did. So, and that happens. Sometimes we have either mid or late year laws that can impact us. This is going to require a notice to employees. It's going to require a handbook change. So we already had victims of workplace and what they're eligible for. This is just what they've done is they've changed what the definition of a victim is and what time can be taken off. It clarifies that you can't discriminate against a victim of violence. I hope you never would anyway, but they did write that into the law. And that now victims or a family member of a victim can take time off to attend judicial proceedings related to that crime, including any jury duty. So I'm going to read you what they now describe as a victim, because it's kind of lengthy. It's a person against whom certain crimes are committed, including a violent felony, a serious felony, felony theft or embezzlement, or a person who suffers direct or threatened harm resulting from specific crimes or delinquent acts specified in the law. So again, at the end of the day, if you have an employee or an employee who had a close family member who was a victim of a crime, the way the law is written, we just need to give them the time off. They need to deal with it.
Can you read that definition one more time?
Absolutely.
Just so that everyone's fully clear on that?
Okay.
Because there were a lot of words there.
There were. I'll do it a little slower too. So a victim of a violent felony, a serious felony, felony theft or embezzlement, a person who suffers direct or threatened harm resulting from specific crimes or delinquent acts specified in the law. So again, if you have an employee who this is impacted directly, either to them or immediate family member, we have to give them the time off they need to take it. Now, the other thing that changed in this law this year is we have to allow them to use their California paid sick leave for these matters as well. So they added that as another reason you can take your California paid sick leave.
Gotcha.
Okay. Otherwise, it's unpaid.
Okay. And then there's another one here, SB 590, which is the paid family leave expansion for designated persons.
Okay. So if we all pay into this program, paid family leave, don't like the name because it indicates it's a leave, but it's really a pay program through the EDD, the Economic Development Department, who also oversees state disability and unemployment insurance. We all pay into this program called paid family leave. If I have a family member that needs care, and I want to take time off, one, I may be eligible under California or federal family leave laws. There's some depending circumstances on that. But if I want to, but then I want to get paid for that leave that I take, I can apply for paid family leave. And it's up to 8 weeks of, it's up to 80% now. So it's 80% of pay up to 8 weeks to care for that family member. They have added a new member of whom I can take time off for, and that is designated person. So what is a designated person? They define it as any care recipient related by blood or whose association with the individual is the equivalent of a family relationship. In other words, my live-in boyfriend or partner. So anybody that I am responsible for, I'm caring for, that is a significant relationship in my life. We have a designated person form. Any employer can create one, right? That an employee can once a year designate this person. Mm-hmm. They can't change their designated person. They break up with the boyfriend, get a new boyfriend. Can't change mid-year their designated person. They can only do it once a year. And the EDD is going to have the employee attest under penalty of perjury as to that relationship. So, you know, I don't think it's, you know, I think sometimes people think, oh my gosh, they could call anybody a designated person. But the EDD is going to make them attest to it.
And this is a new law going into effect January 1st as well. This didn't exist before?
The paid family leave exists, but the designated person, that's new designation.
Okay. So that's the change on this. So paid family leave, is that different than FMLA?
Yes.
Is that
very different? So I could spend an hour just talking about leaves and pay, but every leave of absence is a two-prong deal. One is what leave do they qualify for? So the leave could be family leave, federal family leave, California family leave, pregnancy leave, disability leave, workers' comp leave. And then the other prong is, when I'm on that leave, how do I get paid? And paid family leave is used for caring for a family member. We have state disability, which is taking care of yourself. Also, while you're disabled due to pregnancy, you can take state disability. And if you have workers' comp, if you're on a workers' comp claim, it's covered under workers' comp insurance. So most leaves in California also have a pay element to them. Not all, but most. And so it depends on the circumstances.
Yeah. So this is why your job is never going to go out of style. There's always going to be something that, like, AI is not coming anywhere near you. And I know we're going to talk about AI here in a little bit too. But wow, you've just got like so much happening right here. Next one on the list here is AB 692, Assembly Bill 692, is a ban on stay or pay provisions. Okay. And I was like, what is a stay or pay provision?
Well, I'm going to give you a loan and you can't quit until you pay back that loan.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Or some kind of debt that you might owe me. And I say you have to stay as long as you're indebted to me.
Mm-hmm. So what does this law do?
You can't do that anymore.
Okay.
So essentially, you have to be very careful about the language that are written in these stay or pay provisions. Well, what happens if they don't pay me back and they end up leaving? You can file a civil action for money's owed. That's what you can do. Now, there are two places where this comes into play that is common among employers are tuition reimbursement. So they might pay for your tuition, but that means you have to stay with me for 2 years, or moving bonus, you know, moving allowance. I'll pay to have you move, but you have to stay with the company for X amount of time, or retention bonuses. Here's a $5,000 retention bonus, but you have to stay with us for at least 1 year. Okay.
Right.
There's exceptions to those, but they're narrow, and it's about the language that you use. So I can't, it'd be too much to try to get into it here today, but I would recommend for any employer who has any type of these stay or pay agreements that they look at this law and make sure that they are compliant so that they don't end up with a claim on it now.
Right. There's something on this list called the perfect pawn.
Okay.
And I was looking through this and I was like, okay, wait, did I read this right? It actually can make anyone in charge of payroll personally liable for something? Did I read that
right? Not just payroll, but the employees themselves. So Perfect Pawn is a company in New Jersey. This actually became a federal decision. But by the way, we have the same rule already in California. So I thought it was great to highlight it.
Yeah.
So Perfect Pawn is a company in New Jersey. And one of the managing directors was not paying people properly. He misclassified employees that he shouldn't have as exempt. He lowered their salaries without notice. He failed to pay hourly employees minimum wage and the resulting overtime to them, and he failed to pay them timely. His CFO warned him he was non-compliant, but he continued with these practices anyway. So a wage claim was filed against the company, and both under the Fair Labor Standards Act, which is federal, and the New Jersey wage and hour law, they said, hey, you were acting as the employer. Therefore, we say you are personally liable in addition to the company. And he was actually found personally liable for $2 million in violations. We already have this law in California. And the labor commissioner can not only come after the company, they can come after a person that works within the company if they were acting on behalf of the company overseeing those non-compliant practices. So important reminder.
Yeah. But California's already had that, but this is just kind of spreading out now with that law.
Right. And federal.
Yeah. So that's interesting. You know, on this list that you sent me, there are 29 different items. We're covering 14 here today in this podcast. You know, we're already 35 minutes into this thing. The one that I will end on, because it's so open-ended, and we kind of touched on this earlier, is AI. You know, it's coming for jobs. It's coming for white-collar jobs. It's coming for people who thought that, oh, technology can never be replaced. A lot of this hasn't even been written yet, right? We're kind of in this new area. So what's going on with AI? Why does it matter? And what should employers and employees be on the lookout for as we're moving forward into this uncharted territory?
Well, I will say this. I was around, and I'm going to date myself now, but I was around when the internet came about, which, by the way, is only about 25, 30 years old.
I was around pre-internet days, too. I remember the old dial-up things and all that. So
okay. So,
yep.
And I hear a lot of the same things that I remember people saying then. Internet's going to take my job, and we're going to work with only computers and no human beings. And it's kind of funny because I'm hearing a lot of the same things I remember them saying about the internet. And I think AI is going to have some similar impacts, different too, but similar impacts, because it's new. We don't know its capabilities yet. We're learning. It's being written as we go. Both the federal government and state government are scrambling to write laws around it. And what will those laws look like? And how will they impact the workforce? Here's a couple things I think we are seeing happening. AI probably going to replace some entry-level jobs that can be done routinely and under AI and computerization. So that's going to create, so what we're going to see is employees are, we're going to have to start cross-training employees. We may not have as much vertical movement as we do horizontal movement. And that means cross-training them, giving them more skills, et cetera. That's also going to make employees more valuable, the more skill and knowledge they obtain. So us retaining that talent is going to become very vital for employers as well. So we have to be careful about how we use AI, especially when it comes to things like recruiting, hiring, promotion, employment decisions, et cetera. Right now, we already have a law in the books that says that we have to make sure if we use AI that there's no unconscious bias in using AI for those employment decisions. We see companies that are starting to come out to say, I can test it for unconscious bias. But the reality is, we don't really know yet if it has that or not. So I would just be careful. You want to keep up with what's going on. You want to keep up with technology. But we also have to make sure we don't step in it before we can't unstep in it, can't undo it, where we end up with claims. Like any new thing, right? We're going to see claims come forward. We're going to learn from those claims. We're going to see what we can and can't do. We're going to see new laws develop. So I would just say to employers, try to use your ADS, automated decision-making systems, right? Use that in a way that, use it from somebody you trust. Look to, if you use ChatGPT, for example, ChatGPT is still full of errors, especially when it comes to employment law, especially when it comes to employment matters and HR. I find errors on it all the time. And I always know when a client has gone to ChatGPT for an answer, and then they ask me a question and I say, where'd you get that information? Because AI only knows, it can only answer you as well as you ask the question. And if you don't know the answer to begin with, you're probably not going to ask the question. So I would just say tread carefully, tread lightly, tread carefully, keep up with it. HR will keep you informed as the laws change. But it's coming for sure. And so
there's even like right now, a lot of companies using AI in their hiring process, the ATS, the automatic tracking system. Mm-hmm. There was, when it first started, I remember I was working for a big casino company, multiple locations, tens of thousands of employees, multiple locations around the world. And they switched over to doing online applications, you know, where you go online, you fill out this kind of stuff. There were so many bugs in that system where our senior VP of HR went in and she didn't even get qualified for her own job. Like the ATS just kicked her out and said, you're not qualified.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, the thing that you'd have to make sure of, you as the employer, because you're going to be liable, is that your ATS system, if you're using it through AI, is non-biased. And there can be unconscious bias where it certainly wasn't intended, but that's what it ends up providing.
Yeah.
So that's where we're going to see the claims and things like that. So, you know, take heed.
Yeah, that's where I see a lot of the, you know, on LinkedIn, a lot of the job postings and a lot of the gripes is that they can't get through these tracking systems. They're not weighing things. They can't get to a real human. Mm-hmm. Like, what do I do? Are these jobs even real? Right. You know, there's a lot of times they're saying that these jobs don't even exist.
Right.
You know, and they're spending all this kind of time. So all of that is I can understand how it's frustrating for an employee or someone who's trying to look for work, but it's got to be just as much burden, you know, just carry as much burden on the other side too, for the employers.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, attracting, retaining, and engaging. I'm all about that. I have a whole program centered around that. And if that's the frustration your candidates are getting, you are not going to attract the best talent. So that's something to look at, right? I wouldn't depend on that if the kind of talent I'm looking for is that important to me.
Yeah. You know, we were just talking about how we've been around pre-digital age and how networking and personal relationships always were so important. you know, and that's what a lot of the chamber does. You know, we always encourage, you know, getting out there, a real handshake, looking somebody in the eyes and actually talking to them, you know, versus all this technology that's come along. And it seems like now even our chambers and others around the world, they're becoming more and more beneficial because they're introducing that human element again that seemed to have been lost in the last 10 or 15 years. And I think that for the growing companies that want the best talent, yeah, you're going to, I remember when I come across somebody that just had great skills, like was friendly, especially, you know, you're going through a drive-thru and you're like, wow, this person is just like so excited. I give them my card, you know, and I say, hey, would love to, you know, if you're ever looking to leave or you're looking for this, we'd love to, you know, have that conversation. Recruiting is always happening, you know, and so.
The other thing too is people need to be engaged. So if we create everything that is systematized, then you lose that engagement. And it's very hard to maintain loyalty of employees when they don't feel engaged. So again, I see AI will shake out very beneficially, but I don't see us losing the human interaction that I think a lot of people are worried about.
Yeah. Adrienne, there's so much stuff that we covered and even more stuff that we haven't covered. You know, if anybody wants to reach out to you about something that's here, or they go, wow, I had no idea. I thought I can do this all on my own, but I don't think that I can. How can people reach out to you? How can they get in contact with you? What's the best way for that?
Our website gives that contact information. So it's www.hrnetworkinc.com.
And they can just reach out to you there, and you do all types of services from startups.
Mostly supporting smaller businesses, those with 100 employees or less, and providing HR support just like you might have at a big company, but at a much smaller scale. So we make sure that they're covered and compliant. And we put the human touch back into it too.
Yes, yes. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you today and kind of just getting some of the surface level items that you're saying. And I know there's just so many more. Do you on your website have a list of all of the stuff, or can they just kind of book, or can they just don't go to ChatGPT and say, what are the new laws? I think we covered that's probably not the best idea, right?
They might get some of them, but they might not get all of them. We don't have that on our website, but we do this presentation quite often and talk to groups. But again, they're welcome to call us, and what we can do is based on their company size, their industry, we can kind of give them an overview of what they've done. We do HR assessments, and that's really the best thing to do. The first step, we'll come to your company. We'll look at all your documentation, your files, your payroll reports, everything related HR. And we can give you a report then of where you may be out of compliance and kind of talk about best practices of what to do to get in compliance.
Do you recommend companies do that regularly, every year or every few years?
Every few years. I don't think they need to do it every year. If they take heed of the information that we give them and they update and get those things in place and then follow those practices. But that's why you also want to keep up with these new laws. So, you know, because you can go a couple of years, 3-4 years, and all of a sudden you're out of compliance again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, always changing. And that's why we need people like so. Adrienne, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, hrnetworkinc.com, and that's where they can find you.
Thank you, Stuart. So, nice
talking to you. Yeah, you too. Thank you so much.